When the student is ready, the teacher will appear. And just coming into this conversation with Mark Divine, I've got a lot after having the conversation with him. That's probably a better way to say it. I've got a lot of things on my mind, and I'm just going to go ahead and admit this is unscripted. I'm literally just doing this so that I can really have a conversation with myself and process what is going through my head. And hopefully it turns out to be a great intro. And even as I think about what is going through my mind right now, it may turn into a little solo episode. I don't know. But when I started the journey towards living the good life and tapping into my purpose and my passion and my big why, I knew that I wanted to share my journey with other people so that I could help expose other people to the reality and the fact that anything is possible. And so I'm processing my own thoughts and reactions to the conversation with Mark Divine in an effort to share with everybody, because that's what the mentee is supposed to be about. When I pursued the partnership with Jeff Woods and the purchase of this platform, I knew what he had envisioned for it. I knew what I had envisioned for my journey, and there was alignment. And so what's really awesome about the conversation today with Mark is that the other conversations I've had, the other episodes, the other podcast, they each have a unique way of influencing and impacting my world. And it's necessary for me to have those conversations so that I can be exposed, right, to things that other people either have learned, their lessons, and it helps me be a better leader, be a better manager, a better husband, a better father. And yet, sometimes they don't actually align with the current season of challenges that I'm going through as a leader, as a husband, a father, or whatever other role I hold. Today's conversation with Mark is in extreme alignment with the season of life that I'm in, which is really about a relationship with myself and diving deep on what that looks like and how I show up as a leader and as a father and as a husband. I have recently hired, which this is all part of what is just behind the curtains, y'all. Just being totally transparent, because that was my commitment to the show. And again, processing what I'm thinking in my head after having this conversation with Mark. Recently, I was introduced to this concept of synchronicity, and that when things become in sync and otherwise serendipitous, that we should take a moment and at least acknowledge what the universe or the spirit or God is trying to tell us. In my case, I think it's the Holy Spirit and the universe. And well, I'm really not sure, but I'm just going to say, here's what I know. What I know about serendipity and synchronicity is that it is real. And I want to acknowledge it. And so a couple of weeks ago, probably even a couple of months ago, I started seeing the words high performance coach, transformational coach, and lots of the conversations I was participating in, the people had coaches who they would say were their performance coach or their transformational coach. And so I acknowledged that those words and that concept being shown to me in a very short amount of time by several different people. And I pursued a transformational coach or a performance coach, and I hired one. I am 3 sessions in with my performance coach, which I actually have him lined up for a conversation for next week's episode, which is crazy because, and again, I say crazy, serendipitous, whatever you want to call it, just lining up that I have Ron Patulski set up for my call and podcast episode recording for next week. And this week is already was set up for Mark Divine. And they both talk about the same thing. Anyway, I'm a leader and I have a lot of people that have signed up for my leadership. And everybody that signs up for our leadership is at a different place and in a different season of their life than I am, for the most part, because we're all, you know, on this journey and we all have so many different experiences and circumstances, and we've had different iterations of experiences. So we're all at a different place. And I guess what I'm learning is that until you have a good relationship with yourself, this is what is coming to a head from my coach, which is Ron. Again, he'll be on the podcast next week. But until we have clarity around our values, then we cannot intentionally choose circumstances, relationships, or jobs that are in alignment with those values. Therefore, our behavior in those roles or those jobs and that environment, if it's not in alignment with those values, we may not know what those values are, yet we show up and we're unhappy. And we're unhappy because the environment and the behaviors that we are exhibiting as a result of that environment, call it the people around you, the schedule, the job, the work, the passion, the motive behind the motivation, when they're not in alignment with our values, we're unhappy. And how many of us, again, I'm talking to myself, clearly have articulated what are the values that show up in relationships that felt really good to us and for us, relationships that really motivated us? What are the values that are present in relationships that inspire us? And until Ron asked me those questions, I didn't know. I could recall a handful of relationships that I really appreciate and that feed me and that are good, but I've never actually dissected the values that are present in those relationships. And that's part of what is showing up right now in my workplace with certain positions that we have some change and turnover in. And even some of my relationships, it's crazy. And then what we're talking about with Ron and my performance coach in advance of this conversation with Mark, we're talking about programming. And when we're born, things start to happen. And I know this from early childhood education, that background that I have, we begin to create coping mechanisms. Yet our brains aren't fully developed enough in such a way to create healthy coping mechanisms. So we create coping mechanisms based on whatever resources and brain development, cognitive development that we have at that time. And what's happening and what I'm learning is that we bring those coping mechanisms into the next experience that requires coping. And we apply the same thing. And that happens over and over and over again. And before we know it, we're grown adults and we've brought things of our past, coping mechanisms that we developed when we didn't have the right cognitive development to create healthy ones. We bring those unhealthy coping mechanisms with us into adulthood. And I've got to think, and I'm questioning, right, with my coaches and this work that I'm doing, I've got to ask myself, how many people are around me in my organization, in my family, in my friendships? How many people are around me that haven't done the work to peel off the scab of their coping mechanisms or their programming, and they're not showing up as their authentic self? My feelings are that there's a lot of people that are around me who are living primarily out of their ego, this protective shell, or their programmed self, and not truly living from their true self or their authentic self. And that's rocking my world right now. So much so that whenever I had the conversation with Mark and I listened to the details that he shares with leadership, what you'll hear in his conversation is that the leaders are the bottleneck of progress, and that where we are today, teams, groups of people are the real leaders. And it's up to us in the role of leadership to unlock our team's collective wisdom. And if we're not in a good, healthy relationship with ourselves, if we're not willing to be vulnerable, if we're not emotionally skilled and regulating our own emotions and impulse control, then how can we help facilitate the development of our people that we lead? It's really hard. And if we don't, then we're having a team that's sort of locked, smothered because of their underdeveloped emotional skill set, emotional intelligence, if you will. Some notes that I took during the conversation that I just want to, again, reiterate, and I realize this is a long introduction. Again, it may end up being its own episode, but I appreciate you listening. And again, I hope this brings you value. But here's the deal. These are just notes that I have taken during the conversation that I want to share. The season of life that I'm in right now and at this moment, that's one of the things that I think is just showing up in my head right now. I took the leap of faith to start this podcast, to purchase the podcast and the platform from Jeff Woods, not knowing what it would lead to. And we're about 14 or 15, 16 episodes in, and now I have this breakthrough, and I'm in the midst of a breakthrough. I'm in the midst of this season of, I would say, true learning, where the conversations that I've had in the past, the experiences that I've had in the past with even this podcast, they have created the opportunity for me to land in this spot so that, again, what I said on the top of the show, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. I'm ready. And now all of a sudden, these conversations are taking on a whole new meaning. And I can't wait for you to hear the conversation with Mark, because it's so powerful and it has had such a profound effect on me as a leader. And it's going to unlock potential and ultimately increase my performance as a human being, as a husband, as a father, as a friend, as a business owner, as a manager, as a leader. It is going to change my outlook because it will give me new words to use, more scenarios to describe with our people that will unlock certain roadblocks that my people are experiencing, which allow their performance to grow and to be enhanced. And I can't wait for that. Let me tell you a little bit. I've got a note on why did I hire a performance coach? And part of why I hired the performance coach is because, and I didn't have the words to use at the time, but there's this expectation that I carry of holding a certain level of happiness in my life. And I've been seeking that my whole life, right? I think it's pretty universal that we want to be happy individuals. And there's something around my circumstances and my environment that I feel like is preventing me from experiencing the level of happiness that's available. And I need a breakthrough. I've said it many times that what got me here won't get me where I want to be. And I believe that's true. And so I need to do something different. And I've never had a performance coach. I've never had a transformational coach. And something's got to change inside of me to unlock my potential, to allow me to help unlock my team's potential. And that's why I'm going on this journey with a performance coach. And here's the other thing. For those of you that know me and know the town that I'm from, there'll be a lot of local listeners, friends of mine that will listen. You might know this already, but I grew up in a place where we primarily were blue-collar workers, and we just worked hard. My family worked hard and long hours, and that was a badge of honor. And this mindset coaching and performance coaching and some of the things that we've been talking about, beliefs and values, a lot of the people in my hometown, my family, really, there's several that would consider this woo-woo and hogwash and crazy and quit wasting your money. And that's programming. That's programming that haunts me today and makes me hesitate to even go here. And so a lot of what I'm doing today is to just face my own fear. And as Mark Divine says in his book, Staring Down the Wolf, I'm staring down my wolf of fear that I'm wasting money and I shouldn't be investing in mindset and discovering values. I'm going to show up and I'm going to do it anyway. And so far, the breakthroughs in the mindset and the awareness have been really, really impactful. And I'm thankful that I'm staring down my wolf. Again, we talk about beliefs, mindset, emotional intelligence, values, behavior. And one of the things I've already shared, which is so true, you know, with recruiting staff and partners in our businesses, we've got some folks that are leaving some pretty critical positions in my world right now. And I'm so disappointed because it didn't work out. And I have to process that disappointment. And the coaches are helping me figure out, well, what is it that you feel and why are you disappointed? And I say it all the time, one of my biggest weaknesses is wanting more for other people than they want for themselves. And gosh, I see my businesses as a doorway, as a machine, as an ecosystem that will allow people to come join our ecosystem who are on the search, on the quest to live the good life. And we say it all the time, the good life is whatever you want in your life. A successful life is a life getting you what you want. My biggest fear in the world is that I would grow old and have regrets that I didn't live the life that I could have lived. That is my biggest fear. And that's why I'm on this journey to continuously be intentional and strategic and plan or at least think about the life that I want so that I can start living it. And which I say start, I'm living the life that I want. The fact that I have these coaches and that I'm having this conversation, that is me being who I want to be. This is what's necessary to have what I want to have. A small squirrel tangent, if you will, whatever. My son was recognized as the Brotherhood recipient at his school. And we got to go to his school yesterday for the first time since the pandemic and celebrate all of the students who were awarded this Brotherhood and Sisterhood Award. And guys, I was able to practice gratitude and gratefulness and thankfulness for having a school that has this award, that teaches what it's like to be Christ-like, to love one another and to be genuine. And then for me to have a son that has been awarded this award was just so powerful. And for us to be able to gather as a school in, I'm not going to say the middle of the pandemic, hopefully we're on the end of it, but there's still schools that don't have school. Yet our school is having school and they've managed the COVID very well, have not had outbreaks. And so just the opportunity to come and to be a community and to be in relationship with other people, the village that it takes to help raise my family, I was so grateful and so thankful. So I'm living my good life, no doubt about it. Yet what I'm learning with these positions that are leaving and the disappointment of folks not staying inside of the ecosystem, I'm learning about boundaries, and that's a big deal. And I'm learning that if you're not clear on what your values are, you just know that you're unhappy. And so we make a change, we get a different job because we're seeking happiness. Yet if we're not clear on what those values are that help us have happiness, then we'll just get another job. And the likelihood of it fulfilling our souls and our minds and our hearts to have happiness is just by chance, because we didn't clearly identify what our values were and find a job and a group of people who share those same values. The law of attraction, relationship with self, like watching, and I'm going to put a YouTube video in our inner circle in our Mentee podcast group, and I'm going to share it with y'all so that you can look at it. So if you're listening to this and you want more, go to the Mentee inside of Facebook, or if you're an inner circle member, you can go to the inner circle membership private group, and I'll post the video in there too. And it's about the beliefs that we have. And do we hang on to the beliefs of our past or the beliefs of our future? And so many people, and we talked about this, I think it was episode 4 of season 4 with Ben Hardy, and how important it is to get clarity around your future self to internalize that vision of your future self so that as you're going through life, you can remember the attributes of your future self and bring them into fruition. Yet most people, what we know, hang on to memories of our past. And this video is, and again, talking about synchronicity and serendipitous things, that video was shared with me, and it's so in line with what Mark and I talk about in our conversation. Incredible alignment of these things that are happening in my world right now. Another thing that happened last Thursday, I went to a mastermind day with some guys that are from GoBundance, the mastermind community that I belong to. We had an incredible time hanging out, getting to know each other, and for me, being exposed to things that I didn't know that I didn't know. Just had a great time. One of the things that they talked about was a second page customer. And you may have heard the story, but the story goes something like this. There was a sales presentation that a salesman put together, and it was 20 pages long. And he went to his prospective client, and on the second page, the client said, "I'm sold. Where do I sign?" The salesman said, "I haven't finished my presentation yet." They go back to the office, and he's sharing that story with his manager, and his manager says, "Hey, man, the people that you're looking for as a customer will be a second page customer. You won't have to go through slides 3 through 20 because they'll already be at a place in their life, a season in their life where they get what you're saying from the first two pages." And for me, working on this relationship with myself, my performance, my role as a leader, a salesperson, even in this space of the mentee and our followers and our downloads and things like that, what I'm coming to learn is that I can't be all things to all people. I'm not God. And so there's going to be people that come into our world and they go, and that's okay. And the people that we're looking for as employees and partners and investors and customers, they're second page customers. The people that are in my personal world, the people that I'm recruiting to join some of these masterminds or to go on certain trips and things of that nature, I shouldn't have to sell them pages 3 through 20. And for whatever reason, I've had a lifestyle of being a 20-page salesperson. And I have to ask myself through this performance coaching that I'm doing, why is that? I don't know. Why do I feel like I have to work so hard? I'm not privileged to just have second-page customers and live the good life, which could be the simple life, and perhaps not so hard. Wild stuff, y'all. If you've listened this far, I appreciate you hanging in with me, and I hope that this is bringing you value and that you can relate. I'm totally going out on a limb here, a leap of faith that things which are most personal are also most universal. Again, the conversation with Mark, staring down your wolf. You have the wolf in your head and the wolf in your heart. And gosh, he brought such great insight. So whether or not this becomes an intro to that conversation or its own, make sure that you listen to the Mark Divine conversation. It's so good. We talk about flow and what is flow and how flow, for me, that's a value. I have identified flow as a value, and that when I have flow, I have happiness. And when I have happiness, I have fun. And when I have fun, there's freedom. And it's just a really unique way of looking at things. And my performance coach, again, who's going to be on the next episode after Mark's, has helped me get here. Mark talks about shadows that follow me around or follow any of us around and keep us from realizing our full potential. What are the shadows? So that's a good question. I haven't really spent a lot of time diving into that yet, but what are the shadows that follow us around or follow you around that keep you from realizing your full potential? One of the things that I made a note of, I said this in terms of the shadow, this is where I'm at. This is real life. This is pulling the curtain back and just being raw, vulnerable, and transparent with where I'm at. I have started asking myself, really, I came up with this question a couple of years ago, and when Mark talked about the shadow that follows us around, on the backdrop of what Ron is helping me understand with programming, this is what I wrote. What are the recurring patterns or programming that I keep repeating that keep me and my team of people who have essentially committed to me and my leadership from going further or realizing more of their potential? If what Mark is saying is true, and I believe that it is, that our teams are now the leaders and the leader of the team is the bottleneck, then I've got to look in the mirror and I've got to see what it is that I can help eliminate or add or a little bit of both that will allow my people to flourish more. Self-mastery in service. Those are some words that Mark talked about. I thought that was really, really a great way that I can relate to. Again, that's what this show is about. That's what these conversations are about. It's about exposing you all to the conversations that I get to have with mentors and coaches and people like Mark that will help me continue my journey of self-mastery, not to go out and make millions and millions of dollars, but to serve other people. And at our core, he says, we're made to serve. And I believe that too. And we're made to love. Yet our programming and our ego often prevents this from happening at the level that is possible. I've shared this many times over because it is something that came, there was a scenario or a vision that came to me, and it's just, I'm just going to go ahead and share it relative to these recurring patterns and self-examination and looking in the mirror. But when you're a kid, your brain doesn't have the cognitive development. It's not formed well into adulthood. It's not formed to cope in healthy ways. And so I talk about this with some of my employees or people that I mentor. It's like you're a canvas being painted. Your life is the canvas and other people are painting your canvas and it's texturized. It's got rough spots, smooth spots. You can tell where the brush strokes have went from left to right, up and down, or in a swirl. And until you get into adulthood and you kind of remove yourself from that painting and reflect on that picture, you're reflecting on your life and you're really evaluating your beliefs, your programming by looking at this picture. You may not like the top left corner being rough and painted black. And until you're able to realize that and that you have the power to sand it, smooth it and paint it a different color that allows you to move forward, you'll continuously show up in life and in the roles that you are playing, whether it's husband, wife, sister, brother, aunt, uncle, leader, boss, manager, child. You'll continue to show up bringing about the pain and the memory of the past trauma into every relationship that you enter into. And as a leader, that's what I'm processing right now. As a leader, I know that I have people who haven't done that work. And it's my job to help expose them to these opportunities in such a way that they can have sort of a cleansing breakthrough and start to show up as their true self, maximizing their skills and their talents that God made them to have. So anyway, that's a lot of things that I've said. Clarity around your future. Being just really clear on what your values are, what your future life looks like, and then meditating and journaling about that so that you can manifest those things in your present life, your present circumstances. I do think that you have to win in your mind before entering the battlefield. And Mark talks about that in our conversation as well. Mark is a great storyteller, and I think that you'll really enjoy our conversation today. The last thing that I have noted is people development begins with emotional development, and that's an inside job. It's a tough job, and especially if we go back to second page customer and looking for people that are hungry and ready and willing to get on the bus because they've already accepted or processed their painting, if you will, and ready to pursue their future self. And that's what I am passionate about. That's what I hope this mentee and the inner circle, I hope that we can facilitate conversations for the everyday person. That's the cool thing. It's for the everyday person that ordinarily might not think they have a chance at succeeding or living the life they want. And hopefully by being transparent and sharing my stories and the conversations on the show, we will give people the opportunity and the inspiration that they can get out of their circumstances. But you gotta want it. And I think to get there, you have to go through some iterations of this kind of work. I had some notes here, which I think are, you know, maybe relevant. We'll see what you guys think about it from feedback. And I'd love feedback in our inner circle or our mentee podcast page on Facebook. I would love for y'all to give some feedback and help me understand or at least continue my journey of learning. But as a leader, I'm surrounded. This is another thought that I had. I'm surrounded by competitive colleagues who are all driven and results oriented. Like we measure numbers and we measure metrics every single day. And it's all about this pressure to hurry up and get there. We want to win. That's who we are, especially as entrepreneurs and leaders. And here's the thing that like all of these conversations are aligning up to help me at least consider is that I'm the average of the five people I spend the most time with. So if I'm in a group setting or I'm in a position that's surrounded by driven, intense, results-oriented people, that is all about hitting the number, hitting the number, hitting the number, which I'm not discounting at all. I think you have to be growing or you're dying. I think that you have to have progress. And at the same time, if we're not working on ourselves and our values and our emotional development as a team, and the environment doesn't really allow for that because a day without growth is a day without success. And obviously without success, you could be considered a failure. You don't ever get the chance to slow down and you don't ever get the chance to stop. And as a leader, I'm making a stand for that. That's something that I am working through and I want to bring to my organization and this podcast and anywhere that I speak or teach or coach. I'm bringing the notion that we have to slow down and focus on the essentials and the foundation of success, which I think is clarity of future self. And I think it's identifying your values and bringing those into your job, your role, and your organization. I clearly understand that there's anxiety that fills my own head and incites my wolf of fear to slow down and to maybe have a day, a week, or a month where our numbers aren't where they need to be. Yet, here's the thing that I processed. My friend, Jeff Woods, he says it in the one thing. And I can't remember who, it's either Carol Dweck or Susan Scott, Fierce Conversations. And what it is people go bankrupt slowly, then suddenly. And I think that's the shape of success. And that's what we talk about over at The One Thing. The shape of success happens slowly and then suddenly. And a lot of people are failing so slowly, they think they're winning. That's a good observation for me to just sit and think about as I live in a entrepreneurial community where we're focused on numbers and constantly hitting those numbers. Whereas really what I think is happening or should happen, I think, is that I think we should be winning so slowly we may feel like we're failing. I don't know if it has to be that opposite, that drastic, but I think if we're focusing on the right things, it may be slower because it takes time to help people process their relationship with their self, vulnerability, programming, their values. And I think that somebody said it once, to go slow is smooth and smooth is fast. And that's where I'm at. That's literally where I am at as a leader. And I'm so thankful for this show. I'm so thankful for the conversation with Mark, the timeliness of me reviewing this, these show notes and this conversation has just been magical in the, you know, against the backdrop of my performance coach, Ron, the conversation I'm going to get to have with him later today that we will also publish. Wow. That's all I can say is wow. So, hey, look, I know this has been, hopefully it has not been are perceived as just a bunch of rambling. It is a conversation with myself. I will tell you that. Hopefully it's good. I would absolutely love your feedback. And I hope that you take some value from this conversation or from my processing the notes with Mark Divine. With that, Let me introduce the conversation with Mark Devine. Mark Devine is a Navy SEAL, and he has got a training and coaching company. We talk about the name of it in our show, and he's got a book that's out, can be purchased through Amazon or wherever you purchase your books. I listen to it on Audible. It's called Staring Down the Wolf. And I'll say this one more time, too, in terms of serendipitous activities, synchronicity. I had a conversation with a guy named Jesse. He's local. He and I, he had reached out to me to connect probably 8 months ago. We never were able to make it happen. We were able to finally make it happen last week. And he brought me a copy of Mark's book, Staring Down the Wolf. He had no idea that that is the very next episode that I would publish on The Mentee. So if that doesn't give you the chills in terms of the conversation that I had with Mark being a necessary one and a good one, I don't know what would. So with that, let's get into the conversation with Mark Devine. This is The Mentee Podcast. I'm your host, Wyatt Graves, and each week on our show, you will get to learn from world-class mentors who share behind-the-scenes strategies which will help you level up your life and your business. Jim Rohn said, "You're the average of the five people you spend the most time with." If you're interested in upgrading your five and living the good life, then this podcast is for you. Mark, congrats on the new book, man.
Thank you so much.
Tell me a little bit about the backdrop. How did you decide to write this book about these topics?
Well, I've been training leaders and teams for some time now. Started with SEAL Fit, where I trained individuals, special operators, and then in a team environment. And then I had a lot of corporate teams and teams from groups like YPO and whatnot who wanted us to bring their services. So we did a lot of custom teamwork. And it was extremely effective. What we often found, Wyatt, was that the leader of those teams was often the limiting factor in the team's ability to really tap into what we call that 20X potential. And so we started working with leaders. In fact, my Unbeatable Mind program all is essentially a integrated leadership development program. We call it vertical development, where we try to evolve the consciousness, the awareness, the connectability and compassion, you know, all the internal kind of emotional, intuitive skills, and even spiritual alignment skills of leaders. Whereas most leadership training is what we call horizontal, and it's trying to give the leader greater capacity in things he already does. You know, and even like strength finders is like this. You got these strengths, so let's leverage those strengths. Forget about your weaknesses because you don't want to spend much time on those. But if your weakness is the limiting factor and it's about your emotional development, then you're just not going to be able to bring out the best in your team. So I've been noticing that and working with leaders on unlocking that potential through emotional and intuitive development now for about maybe 5 years or 6 years. And it's been extremely powerful and successful, transformative. So at any rate, back to your immediate question, when my publisher asked me to write a book about Navy SEAL leadership, you know, what they were looking for is kind of like the next Jocko book or the next, you know, book with a little bit of sex appeal that a lot of people buy, but they didn't really care so much about the leadership content. They figured, you know, if you tell people how you led in the Navy SEALs, people will buy the book, and that's good enough for them. So I said, you know, that's interesting, and I'll do it, but I really want to do it my way. And they said, you got carte blanche, whatever you want to do. So anyways, this story is actually pretty interesting, and it's multifold. So, and this project, you've interviewed a lot of authors, I'm sure, and everyone's got a different way that they succeed in writing a book. There's multiple different paths you can take or strategies. So, and I've tried a lot of different ones. On this one, because I was super busy, and my one thing was keeping me really busy with my podcast and my speaking engagements and, you know, all my outreach trying to impact 100 million people, or with a goal of impacting 100 million people to become more world-centric leaders, I said, okay, I'm going to hire a writer slash editor to help me out with this. So I conceived of the book, and I conceived of what I call the seven commitments that forge elite teams. And that came to me in a meditation. And then I mapped out the whole book. And then I hired this guy to essentially interview me on each chapter and to record it. And then to spin back, you know, the first version, you know, the first edition.
Mm-hmm.
At any rate, and he did that. And like most people who've gone down this road, I ended up rewriting every single word in the book, but found it to be a valuable process. Now, check this out. So the book was going to be called The Seven Commitments That Forge Elite Leaders. And those commitments are courage, trust, respect, growth, excellence, resilience, and alignment. And they all kind of build upon each other, but they actually work together in more of a holographic manner, as you can imagine. Mm-hmm. So that was it. It was going to be like formulaic, almost like Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. It's, you know, Stephen Covey, this would be the seven commitments that forge elite teams. And they're really solid principles. And I've got stories of these exemplars who come, who are like elite warrior leaders, like Admiral McCraven, who ran SOCOM and wrote Make Your Bed, and Admiral Olson, who also ran SOCOM. And these are earlier stories that nobody had heard about, where they exemplified one of these commitments, courage in the case of Olson and Mogadishu, and trust in the case of McCraven, and in a major accident he had where people almost died and he had to take full accountability and humbly, you know, present that he was not perfect and that he was prone to failure just like everyone else. So around the last chapter of when this writer, John Vechner, that I had hired, great guy, he sent it back with a title page. And the title wasn't Seven Commitments That Forge Elite Teams. It was Staring Down the Wolf with a subtitle of The Seven Commitments That Forge Elite Teams. And it was literally one of those moments where I was stopped in my tracks and I was like, oh shit, wow. And he got that image or that idea from the cover of my book, Unbeatable Mind. And in fact, you can see a version of that cover behind me, right? Where I'm staring down the wolf, and the wolf represents the wolf of fear, coming from that Native American story that there's a wolf of fear that resides in your head, and there's a wolf of courage that resides in your heart, and it's the wolf that you feed the most that will dominate your attitude and, you know, your success, essentially. So I stare, you know, I have this whole training that I've been working with that is essentially uncovering your shadow by staring down, you know, your fear. And so he chose this title. And, you know, it's not like I had to keep it. He was like making a recommendation, but it stopped me in my tracks and said, yeah, that's what I really want to write, because I've been kind of doing the Navy SEAL formula, Navy SEAL leadership formulaic thing. And this is the book I really want to write. It's all about the emotional development that leaders need to undertake so that they can unlock not only their full potential, but even more importantly, the potential of their team. And I believe, Wyatt, that the team is the leader now, right? Teams are where all great accomplishments come from anyways. But the leader's got to stop being the limiting factor and stop thinking they're the genius or they're the strategist or they're the visionary or they're the transformer. It doesn't happen that way. It happens through the collective power, insight, and emotional conflict and resolution that happens within the teams. Mm-hmm. So what I just did was I ended up kind of splitting the book into two pieces, but the two pieces run parallel. One is looking at the shadow aspect and the emotional biases, the boo, what we call boo or background of obviousness, that causes leaders such as me to be the limiting factor. And I tell stories using my own failures as a leader, particularly in the corporate world, about how my shadow really tripped me up and caused things to fall apart at the team level. And therefore that organization either fell apart or that project, you know, fell apart or just didn't achieve what it could have. So I ended up writing the book that I really wanted to write after all. And it was through this nudge of this suggestion for this title. And I had to completely reorient. I had to write a new introduction, basically re-edit the entire book and add all this context around this juxtaposition about here's what it looks like when the team and the leader are fully committed to courage or trust or respect. And here's what it looks like when that commitment has fallen short, right? And you show up, in my case, I show up and I breach someone's trust, or I show up without the courage to say no, or the courage to hold someone accountable to higher standard, you know, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So I know that was a little bit of a long way of explaining it, but it was quite of an interesting process. The book took 3 years plus to put together. So it was really a labor of love. And I'm really, you know, both scared shitless and also proud that this is a book where I came out and say, you know what, I'm actually not perfect. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of leaders put themselves out there as like having figured it all out and they're perfect. And even my book, The Way of the SEAL and Unbeatable Mind, I don't go into my flaws. You know, I kind of maybe humorously point to some of my failures, but I don't talk about them. And this one, sure, I really go into it in depth.
You know, one of the things, and look, it's a great book. I got to listen to it on Audible.
Awesome.
And one of the overarching themes that kept just coming to fruition for me was your commitment to self-mastery.
Mm-hmm.
It's like every time, like it's just like this fundamental sort of drive that you apparently have where, you know, no matter what's happening, it's this commitment to continuous improvement. How can I learn? How can I grow? How can I master this and go to the next step? Tell me about that. Where does that come from?
Well, when I was in my 20s, I started a practice of Zen meditation. I was already an athlete and a good athlete. So I was doing competitive swimming, competitive triathlete. And then I got into Zen meditation through my martial arts. When I got a black belt in a traditional karate style, but it was the Zen master was the karate master. So we really valued that aspect of it. And there were a small group of us who really took to that part of the training. And we would train every Thursday for an hour sitting in Zen. We did a little bit before and after every training session. And then I took it to home, my home practice, and started doing it every morning for in 20 minutes to a half an hour. That began, you know, an evolutionary process in me that continues to accelerate to this very day. The combination of hard physical training with sitting in silence, you know, you can imagine the metaphor, the imagery of like the Zen samurai warrior, you know, sitting on a mountain bench, you know, in total silence, stillness, and, you know, the opposing warrior trying to sneak up behind him and suddenly just springs into action and just destroys the enemy. That's been kind of my metaphor. So I went into the SEAL teams. The meditation transformed me through, of course, the neuroplastic effect it had on my brain, but also just this great comfort I developed with being able to be in silence and stillness and to tap into my creative and intuitive self, which all lies within that kind of other mind space, right? That we don't typically use as Western builders, like entrepreneurs and you and I, you know, we're all out there doing, doing, doing. Focusing, building, building, mm-hmm. building. On the other side of that is this vast creative reservoir that you can tap into to do all that better or be more effective or more focused. And when you learn to tap into that reservoir and to align with it, then that's where you find that what we call that 20X potential. So I learned that in my 20s. And then I went into the SEAL teams as a warrior and really got to put it into practice. And the skills that I learned were allowed me to really activate a flow state literally on demand with just a few mental machinations. I was able to shift into flow state. I was able to really build some great leadership teams or great teams through this kind of commitment to mastery, which then expressed itself as service, but not service like, oh, I'm going to go donate money to build a house in Mexico. The kind of service that said, you know what, I exist to make your life better. And how can I help you now? And this is the attitude we had with our teammates. And it's that attitude that really requires that heartfelt connection. We use the term kokoro, which means heart and mind merge into your actions. And that requires training. We're not, especially men in the West, are not taught to really connect to our heart and to have that emotional maturity, emotional development. In fact, most men fear it. They don't do that work. They think it's something that happens when you're broken or that your wife drags you by the ear to the therapist, you know, because you're just communicating like shit in your relationship.
Yep.
You know, and so I guess where I'm saying that early introduction to this integrated training method that cracked me open and tapped my emotional strength, got me to connect with my heart, the intuition of my heart and the instinctual knowledge or wisdom of my gut and be able to use my mind in a whole mind capacity got me even more excited about the potential of it, of the human being, right? And so this led to a deep study of human performance and leadership development and unlocking the potential of the teams. And it's all similar, right? These are just different ways that we look at same stuff. The same stuff is how do you tap your highest and best self and align with your duty or calling in life, your service or svadharma? And how do you do the same for your team as a leader? How do you help them align and bring out their best in service? So the two are overarching themes of my company and my program, SEAL Fit, and then the corporate training Unbeatable Mind is self-mastery in service. Not self-mastery so you can go make more money and drive a Ferrari. Self-mastery so you can align in service and help others and the world become a better place. So it's just been extremely motivating to me. And once you tap into that vein and you begin that process and you unlock that accelerating growth, there is no going back.
Yeah.
Right? You find out that that is probably the most important thing that you can do, is to continue to evolve yourself and unlock your potential so that you can serve with more and more integrity and alignment.
That's good. That's good. You said something just then. You said flow state on demand.
Right.
Tell me about that.
Well, flow is essentially the experience of being in kind of a rarefied, deeply connected, highly sensitive state of mind that happens when you're either in a really creative process like writing or creating music or something, or if you're an athlete where all of your training in the moment clicks in because you're being asked to perform at a very high level. And so everything just kind of comes together. And when it comes together, your brain just starts working in a different way. Okay. So most people have talked about flow, like Shishmael, who wrote the book called Flow, and Stephen Kotler, who wrote Stealing Fire. They talk about it as something that happens to you when certain circumstances are correct, you know, typically externally and sometimes internally. And what I learned is that it's actually a state that can be trained through the performance of certain skills or practices that actually organize your brain in the way that it gets organized when these other external things happen. The difference is when those external conditions happen that unlock flow, it's a temporary state. It's something that's like, oh, I hope that I get to flow state. And what I've learned is when you train your mind this way, you can literally intend it to happen and it'll happen. It's a skill, really. Flow is a skill. Now you can use different terms for it. So the skills that we use are, we use the breath work in a certain way to be able to get your brain into the flow zone, so to speak, in this electromagnetic zone. And the brainwave frequencies will be kind of in a high alpha, low beta, which is related to the subjective experience of deep focus, concentrated effort, but without losing your sense of your peripheral awareness. Meaning you're not so deeply concentrated that you lose the forest for the trees. You're able to still take in everything around you, but you're still able to zero in on that football coming at you and to catch it. And also imagery, right? So the use of imagery so that you have you practice the future state in your mind so much that when you are in the moment of performing it, that future state merges with your present moment awareness. Mm. And you're not having to think about the future. You're just in it. You're living the future now. In that future state, you have practiced the skill with perfection. And so that's where, and these two are probably the most radical. And then is to also simultaneously maintain a deep calm, almost a deep calm abiding in the performance moment. The martial arts masters call that stillness in action. And in that stillness in action, everything starts to slow down. And these skills, right, start to slow down in time. In the SEALs, I first experienced this several different times where it literally saved my life. You know, one parachuting accident, I jumped out and I had a midair collision and my parachute literally collapsed and I was plummeting to the ground. And I had like 800 feet before I was going to hit the ground and can't get the parachute open. Mm. So I just begin to click. I click into the state through a couple of deep breaths and the intentionality. And then everything starts slowing down and I can see everything clearly, right? And so I deploy my reserve, boom, boom, I'm shaking. I feel like I got all the time in the world. That doesn't work. I go back up, shake the main, not working, go back up, work on the reserve. You know, and all this time I'm falling, you know, at 100 feet per second.
Yeah.
Right? And I finally, you know, I have about 2 seconds before I hit the ground. I finally go up, pump the main again, and it catches air. And I hit and do a perfect parachute landing fall, and I literally stand up, right? And not a single injury.
Wow.
And that whole time from when I had the mid-air collision, when I hit the ground, was like 8 seconds, but it felt like minutes.
Yeah.
And that's what the flow state will do for you. And this has been well documented, of course, but I guess if there's any contribution in that area of performance, it is that these skills, when you work on those skills from the perspective of tapping your whole mind, then time like that becomes something that you control.
How often are you doing this? Like, is this something that happens throughout the day?
It's a daily thing. Yeah, morning and then spot drills through the day. This is the way we teach it. The most important training is in the morning. So it becomes part of your morning routine. And that's when you do the breath work, the imagery work, curating the mental space, let's say. We call it winning in our mind before stepping foot on the battlefield of the day. Mm-hmm. And then we have a ritual that is pre-physical training. So we also, you know, we don't consider the morning ritual to be our physical training session. So we're also, a lot of people who follow our work are training to be SEALs or special operators, or they're, you know, they're fit leaders, right? Because a part of our thing is that, you know, if you're a leader, you've got to be physically fit and strong, or else you're not going to be tapping your full potential, because your mind is in and throughout your body. And so if your body's weak, your mind is going to be weak, mm-hmm. weaker than it could be. And a lot of people listening are like, I don't believe that because, you know, I'm 50 pounds overweight, but I'm running this company. And I said, great. How would that feel if you were your ideal weight and optimal health and fit and ferocious and still running the company?
Yeah.
Do you think people would respond to you differently? And do you think you'd make slightly different decisions, especially under pressure? You bet you would. So physical fitness is important. So we have a pre-physical training routine, which includes breath work and imagery and attitude adjustment. And then we have a post-workout routine. And these, when you train these, that can be done, you know, with literally like a minute. It's not like you're talking about a lot of time.
Yeah.
Then the way we use the breath and our mind during the training session is important. We practice both concentration and mindfulness during our training sessions. And then we have spot drills throughout the day. So, you know, you could, for instance, at the end of this podcast, you know, I've got another podcast that starts, you know, 10 minutes later. So that 10 minutes is time for me to train. Right. So I might go do a quick breathing exercise or some quick movement, mindful movement, you know, stuff like that.
I want to talk about the work that you're doing with the businesses. So, you know, I've got a market center where we've got real estate agents that I lead. And then I've got actually, which is helps me relate to your stories in the book. For 20 years, I've been in the childcare industry too. And when I got into that business, I knew nothing about early childhood development. Mm. And so in an effort to provide a quality product or service, I had to go learn what is good, healthy early childhood education and early childhood development look like. Mm-hmm. And so I can relate a lot to the stories that you share in your book about the things and the events, the traumatic events or whatever that happened to most kids in their early years. So, you know, knowing what I know about early childhood development, knowing what you share in your book, bringing that to the forefront of business leaders, we're leading a company right now. If you could give me just a short list, if you will, of what your company focuses on to help leaders be better leaders. Is this, for one, give me an overview of what you do. Is it a 10-week program? Is it a year-long program? Is it a retreat? And then if we participated in it, what would we do?
Oh, that's great. A question. Thanks. So we started, I mentioned earlier, I'll give you a little history and then I'll tell you the specific. With SEALFIT, we had, like I mentioned earlier, groups that would come to us and say, hey, we love what we're doing with the Spec Ops candidates. We understand it's very successful. We want to learn those skills. Can you design an event for us? And we'd say, okay, yeah. It was always really focused on the physical and the mental side, you know, because it was like, because it was SEALFIT. It has that Navy SEAL training kind of theme. And then I started getting requests from people saying, you know what, we get what you're doing over there, but it's a little bit too much for us. Like we have people in our organization who are not really into the military or might think we're going to just bury them with, you know, SEAL instructors screaming at them. And I said, well, that's not what it's about. And they said, yeah, I know, but, you know, sorry, we're not going to do it. So I spun out Unbeatable Mind. Actually, the company's called Unbeatable. It's a separate company. And we have a similar training model, but we shifted the emphasis across what I call all five mountains, physical, mental, emotional, intuitional, and Kokoro, which is our version of aligning with your spiritual, your spirit's calling, let's say, or your one thing. And so the physical piece, we don't prescribe as much. We like people, we want people to do it. We want people to be held accountable to it. And we will hold them accountable. But like if someone's thing is yoga or martial arts or CrossFit or Pilates, that's fine. Just as long as you're working on your physical structure, and we'll give you some guidelines, but we're not going to, it's not Navy SEAL training. Does that make sense?
Sure.
Having said that, there are some aspects from the SEAL team building, which are just unparalleled in their ability to really tap the team's energy, to get people out of their head and into their heart, and to expose the weaknesses, which then become opportunities for further growth. So we have taken a few of those aspects and built them into our Unbeatable Mind training model. Now, So how we work with companies and teams is ideally, now we have now close to 300 certified Unbeatable Mind coaches, and these are top professionals coming from 20 different countries. And the ideal scenario, and this is the one that's played out really well for the last couple of years, although we have some flexibility with it, is that we bring the leaders and the team together for a three-day integrated training experience, right, to teach them these tools. Because as you know, it's difficult to learn the nuances of breath work and visualization and, you know, attention control and concentration, you know, and arousal control. It's hard to learn all those from a video, right?
Yeah, sure.
So we bring everyone together in this integrated event. We put them into Boat Cruise, which is our name for team, and we begin to teach them these skills, and we introduce them to these other really unique training methodologies, which are proprietary to us, you know, which look like anybody can do them, but it's the way we do them that's really different. And then they go on a journey where they are put into a boat crew, and then they have a swim buddy, right? And this is their accountability and their, you know, their weekly and monthly connect. So their swim buddy, they're going to connect with every day, right? Make sure that they did their morning training, make sure they did their workout, offer, this is where they get to practice asking for help and offering help. Their boat crew will connect weekly. The boat crew will have a coach, right? So the coach will facilitate the boat crews, but then the boat crews also connect and support each other. The boat crews devise challenges so that they're constantly challenging each other and growing along these five mountains, physical, mental, emotional, intuitional, and kokoro or alignment. And a lot of the work is around the emotional mountain because that's where most leaders really need the work, and that's where they really want to dive in once they have that really trusted unit of the boat crew. And everything that happens in the boat crew is protected space. It's, you know, it's private, confidential. Mm-hmm. So they get to go really deep. So the boat crews meet twice monthly with the coach, and then they connect up weekly.
Got it.
And then these leaders all have, the top leaders are part of what we call the tip of the spear program. And the tip of the spear is where I and my top coaches work with the leader so that the leader can work with their team to bring out the best in their team. So it's really unique in that way, where it's a rare model where we combine leadership development with the individual leader with the team's development, recognizing that those two really are hand in glove, as opposed to just dumping a bunch of new content on a leader and then they go back and they have no idea how to really integrate and bring it to their team. Now, then the last part about it is at the end of the engagement, which we like to have it to be year or year over year.
Gotcha.
We do a more intense integration experience that is going to be anywhere from 6 to 24 hours, depending upon the fitness level of the team, which is going to be, that's going to be their SEAL Fit experience. It has a high perceived like intensity factor, but what happens, as you can imagine, is once people get into it and they work together, done all this training together, suddenly they find that they're just able to do things that they never thought possible or never even considered doing before. And they're taken way out of their comfort zone. And that event itself builds tremendous confidence and also unlocks even further growth. So you create this kind of like spiraling growth. The initial event downloads the knowledge, then they go work with that knowledge, and they're even encouraged to begin to teach others in their organization, you know, which is when you start to really learn something.
Yep.
And then they're held accountable by their swim buddies and their boat crews and their coach. And then they come back together and they test themselves. And that's where the whole process unlocks, you know, massive potential and helps them, you know, perform at their peak. That's the model that we've been working with for the last couple of years. We've delivered this model with, you know, some professional sports teams like the Philadelphia Flyers and some top organizations like, you know, Dolby and others. And then we've done, you know, kind of the one-off where organizations are like, hey, that sounds great, but, you know, I'm not quite ready. And also at this point in time, we can't do the in-person events, so we're doing more virtual events. Mm-hmm. So we're very flexible, but that's the ideal model. It's a long-term process. Transformation can't be done overnight. Leadership development and team development is an iterative process that is not linear, and it's not clean. Step one, step two, step three.
Yeah, I agree.
First you got storming, and then you got norming, right? Or
yeah,
forming, storming, norming, and performing. Yeah, just go through these four steps. Like, no. It really doesn't happen that way. It's always forming and storming and norming. It's an iterative process. It's an evolution.
what you described as the engagement, the picture that I had in my mind was where you had a corporate training meets boot camp meets church retreat.
I like that.
Kind of all three.
Sort of that, yeah.
Yeah. So look, I want to circle back around and then we'll close it out. You know, one of the things in the book that I think appeals to me too, and it's sort of relative to the journey that I've been on as a leader, is helping my people develop their own emotional intelligence, mm-hmm. you know, and their own emotional development. And that is an ongoing work, I guess. How do you suggest as a business leader that you engage your people to go on the journey with you, right? Because a lot of times, at least in my experience, if people aren't showing up already having a strong sense of emotional intelligence or self-awareness, it's really hard to break the ice. You know, yeah. It's scary and it's not really welcomed as something that as a journey they want to go on. So talk to me about that. How do you really get people to buy into that part of personal growth and development?
Ideally, the culture would expect it and demand it. But if your culture doesn't, at this point in time, it'll take a little bit of time. So patience is encouraged, because once you build it, then you would attract and select teammates who are already
sure
to that emotional growth, and they're excited about being part of a growth-oriented team. So if you have members on your team who are not growth-oriented or really put it down or denigrate it, then that's a problem. And so the team, you know, the best way we do this is around the seven commitments, right? Those are, I call them commitments for a reason. They're not things that you just have or that you master, and they're not values that you just put on the wall. They are practices and habits and ways of being that you commit to. And when you commit to it, that means you're also basically putting it out there and telling your team, hey, I commit to courage. And here's what mm-hmm. that means. Humility, transparency, follow through. And I commit to trust, right? And taking risks and to have those crucial conversations and to be trustworthy first. And I commit to respecting you, but in order to respect you, I've got to respect myself. In order to respect myself, I've got to be emotionally mature and overcome shadow issues that actually are making me feel, that make me feel less worthy, which then I put a Band-Aid on and I project, you know, false confidence, or I become judgmental or righteous, right? And so you see people who are not growth oriented, they tend to be those passive aggressive, judgmental, righteous, perfectionists. And the reality is they're just masking over
sure
a self-esteem issue, right? And of course they don't want to admit it because it's painful, but when you commit to these commitments, you're going to get called out on it and you're going to have to face it. You'll stare down your wolf of fear. The reason it works is that everybody commits and everybody has this mm-hmm. shit and everybody falls down seven times and gets up eight, dusts themselves off and says, there I go again. Holy crap, that was a doozy. What did we learn this time? Or what did I learn?
Yeah.
And then the leader needs to model this him or herself, right? Because the leader can't say, yeah, we're going to commit to this, let's do this, and then go back to their office and close the door and not do shit about it, right? That does not work.
Yeah,
this is an all-in effort. One team, one fight. The leader's part of the team. And so everybody's doing it. And then the next part about it is to set up the conditions in the culture as well as your structure to reward, you know, the structure can reward the commitment, demand, but also reward the growth that comes from committing to these things, courage, trust, respect, growth, excellence, resilience, and alignment. And you can also set up systems so that you're really practicing these things, you know, transparency, and the type of communication that's allowed in meetings is one way, right? So being able to have the environment where it's okay to call someone out if they're dumping their emotional bullshit on you and to, you know, have a conversation about that without judgment, without feeling like you're being dumped upon, but for the good of the team. It's like we did in the SEAL teams, in the debrief process. That was, if you took it that personally, like you wouldn't survive for a couple of weeks because you're going to get a lot of that feedback early on and it's painful. But you take it in the air of this is going to make me better, self-mastery in service to my team. So it'll make the team better, which means we'll accomplish the mission. Same thing that happens in the corporate environment. It just takes time. That culture then becomes self-reinforcing, you know, growth environment.
Yeah, that's really what I like the most about what you said. You just have to create the culture and demand it. And then you recruit to that, you know, so that's good stuff. Mark, how can our listeners find out more about you and what you're up to?
In my personal website, markdevine.com, has a ton of information. I've got a daily brief that I put out, which is just like a 5 to 6 minute video on a really interesting, you know, training or subject topic that's relevant. And I have a podcast, the Unbeatable Mind Podcast. So you can search for Mark Devine, D-I-V-I-N-E, or Unbeatable Mind Podcast. That's at, you know, iTunes and Google Play, all the places that podcasts are presented. And the corporate training site is unbeatablemind.com. And then sealfit.com for the hardcore hardy warriors out there who want to get busy and get sweaty and dirty and cold and sandy. And we hope to have our online, our events back in full swing by September, but if not, certainly by March of next year.
Yeah.
Who knows with this pandemic, right?
That's right. Where that's right. Go?
Mark, it's been a pleasure, man. It's so nice to connect with you. Your book is great. I highly recommend it. I think I've already given you a great review on Amazon too. But anyway, if we can do anything for you over in South Louisiana, keep us in mind. We'd be glad to.
I really appreciate that. Thanks so much for having me on, Mike. This has been a lot of fun.
You bet, Mark. Take care. Have a good one.
You too.
All right. Hey, thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Mentee Podcast. If you would like to take what you learned in this episode to a deeper level, head on over to thementee.com/bonus to access a free 30-minute training today. And hey, if you enjoyed this episode, please leave me a 5-star rating with a comment. I read each one and I use it to deliver content that matters most to you. When you do this, you're actually entered into a monthly drawing to win a collection of my favorite personal development books. And don't forget to subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can learn more about The Mentee and our community by visiting us at thementee.com. I'm Wyatt Graves, and I'll see you next week.